there was actually, at the same time, numerous plans in place to murder people. So that was definitely something new for us. You know, the day of very simple groups and very simple methodologies are gone.
I think that we are the only, actually, agency in Europe, most likely in the whole world, which can provide this type of support. So I think that this is our strength.
Welcome to the Europol podcast, the official podcast of the EU Agency for Law Enforcement Cooperation. In this series, we shine a light on some of the biggest cases Europol has supported and how we continue to fight crime. Today's episode, Fighting International Fugitives. Europol serves as the hub for all kinds of international police investigations. If you've listened to previous episodes, you'll know that our crime centres cover a range of crime areas, from counter-terrorism to cybercrime. Behind all these crimes are high-risk individuals who pose serious risks to our societies. And these individuals can sometimes go to extraordinary lengths to avoid being arrested and put on trial. In this episode, we'll show you what a global operation against fugitives looks like. And then we'll show you how Europol assesses and pursues these criminal threats through our operational task forces.
And so today, the United States Department of State is pleased to announce a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the financial disruption of the KTCO or the arrest and convictions of its leaders.
That was the voice of the U.S. Ambassador to Ireland, Claire D. Cronin, at a press conference in Dublin in April 2022. She was announcing the latest measures that international law enforcement are taking against the leaders of the Kinahan cartel, a dangerous transnational criminal organization. This kind of step is only taken against the most serious of criminals. At Europol, we call these people high-value targets, with the Kinahan leaders falling under this category. So what is it that led Europol to designate the Kinahans as high-value targets? And how come the US authorities have put such a large reward out for their arrest? Well, to find out, we have to go back to 2016 when a violent gangland feud was gripping the Irish capital. The Regency Hotel, Dublin, early 2016. A crowd has gathered for an event in the hotel's function room. It's a weigh-in for an upcoming lightweight title fight. The two boxers are on stage, surrounded by management, sports press, and boxing fans. Meanwhile, a silver van pulls up outside. Two drivers wait in the front, while two disguised men, one in women's clothing, get out the van. Calmly, the pair walk into the hotel function room and wait. However, they are not normal boxing fans. After waiting a few moments, they draw their weapons and open fire. Panic erupts as people try to flee. Two more men get out the back of the van outside, dressed in uniforms belonging to the armed unit of An Garda Síochána, the Irish police. But they are certainly not police officers. They are gunmen as well. The two pretend officers enter the hotel lobby, masks on and weapons drawn. They go room to room, looking for their target. 6 minutes later, the four attackers are all back in the van, speeding away from the hotel. One person, David Byrne, is dead. Another two are injured. The gunmen had failed to take out their intended target. What they had succeeded in doing, however, was bringing Dublin's violent, organised crime world into the spotlight. The hotel shooting was part of a feud between two notorious organised crime groups, the Kinahan cartel and the Hutch gang, who were fighting for control of the criminal underworld in the Republic of Ireland.
So I suppose the Kinahan organised crime group has been active in Ireland for a long number of years, but what really brought them to, I suppose, public prominence was the murder in February 2016 of David Byrne at the Regency Hotel here in Dublin.
Assistant Commissioner Justin Kelly is one of the senior figures in Irish law enforcement who is going after organised crime groups like the Kinahans.
So my name is Justin Kelly. I'm an assistant commissioner in An Garda Síochána, which is the Irish National Police Force.
The feud between the Kinahans and the Hutches had been underway for years before the shooting.
So that organised criminal group, the Kinahans, I suppose, became embroiled in a feud which was primarily here in Ireland, focused around Dublin. And the result of that has been 18 murders. And there's also been two deaths in Spain. This was very much a personal feud between two groups. A lot of the individuals in these groups knew each other. In fact, some of them have known each other from their early childhood years in particular areas of Dublin.
This deadly feud and the widespread alleged criminal activities of the Kinahan cartel meant they were high-value targets for Europol. The organised crime group is suspected of being involved in drug trafficking, money laundering, weapons smuggling, and other forms of serious and organised crime. The Regency Hotel shooting showed that violence from the Hutch-Kinahan feud was spilling over onto the streets of Ireland. The Garda, the Irish police, turned up the heat on the ringleaders, the high-value targets.
We put considerable pressure on some of the groups here in Ireland, particularly around asset seizure and forfeiture, which is an area we're particularly strong in here. So our Criminal Assets Bureau, the key objective is to deprive and deny criminals of access to funds, goods, possessions.
Above all else, criminals are incentivized by profits. And the Garda's Criminal Assets Bureau has the job of finding and seizing criminal assets and cash. The Bureau's efforts meant the three Kinahan leaders soon realised that they and their illicit profits weren't safe in Ireland. So they moved to Spain.
This is something that we've seen that, I suppose, these bigger organised crime groups now, they're very much transnational in nature. And they come together, various groups will come together, they work together and they work across continents.
When crime goes global like this, Europol gets to work. Analysts and crime experts here at HQ began receiving Garda requests and assisting the investigation. How else did Deputy Commissioner Kelly and the Irish police turn up the heat?
So I suppose you could nearly look at two elements to it. We had the element here in the Republic of Ireland that we had to deal with, which was very much a murderous feud that was playing out on the streets here in Ireland. We mounted a large number of what we would call threat to life operations. So these were operations where we knew particular individuals were being targeted to be murdered, and actual groups were put together for the purpose of this using technology. So, for example, they would put trackers on victims' cars. They would have finance behind them. They would have weapons supplied. They would have people set up as spotters for murders.
The authorities were looking at a deadly feud of massive proportions. Europol analysts here in The Hague were supporting the Garda's operations as Irish officers on the ground worked flat out to prevent further violence.
We ran approximately 80 of these threat-to-life operations. The result of these were multiple arrests, which effectively took out what I would really describe as hit gangs. Some of them actually in the process of on the way to murder people or very close to doing it. People caught in possession of firearms, encrypted phones, surveillance equipment. We now have around 80 people convicted for those type of crimes, and they're all serving sentences, some of them considerable sentences. And Europol were a really key partner for us, and they supplied us with intelligence that supported those operations.
While the Garda invested immense human, financial and technical resources into stopping the feud in Ireland, the second component of their solution was international.
That second part was all really around international relationships and cooperation and working as, you know, a team with our colleagues abroad.
Key partners included the UK, Spain, Portugal and the Netherlands.
Obviously, our colleagues in Netherlands are very important because of the importation routes in through the big ports there in Rotterdam and Antwerp. And then I suppose overarching all that is obviously our work with Europol, which is obviously absolutely vital. And we've got permanent officers in Europol. And on top of that, we would also second regularly people to Europol. And we have sent for particular operations people on short-term basis to Europol.
Europol has powerful analytical and technical capabilities that support member state investigations into high-value targets, such as the Kinahans. We also have a robust data protection system with strong checks and balances, meaning that we can safely host criminal data, which will support intelligence efforts. And it's all coordinated through our secure real-time communications platform, Sienna.
I suppose that intelligence sharing is just so important for us, because when you're dealing with groups like this, you can often have very dynamic situations. So it's so important that we can get that done in real time, which we can. Europol, I think what's particularly significant for me, I suppose, is the access to, you know, databases, analytical tools are really important. The day of very simple groups and very simple methodologies are gone. Now, these are all complex groups you're dealing with. Sometimes companies that are set up for nefarious reasons. Sometimes they're legitimate companies that are being used. You're dealing with corruption. You're dealing with money laundering. So you've just so many different aspects to them. So for us, the analysis end of it is so important.
Europol was supporting the Garda by providing intelligence and analysis, which was helping apprehend murders with just moments to spare.
So I suppose Europol obviously brings everything together for us on a European level. And then I suppose the final piece to that is the work outside Europe. So obviously our partners in Interpol, and then who was really important for us in this was our partners from the United States.
This is what a global operation against high-value targets looks like. With this many law enforcement agencies on your back, even the most basic parts of life can become difficult, as these high-value targets we're about to discover. To recap, from 2016 to 2021, the Garda were conducting all kinds of sweeps in Ireland to halt violence and seize the cartel's economic assets. European countries and Europol were simultaneously conducting actions and providing criminal analysis of the network. And in 2022, the American authorities put even more weight behind the operation.
It's really important to say the sanctions, you know, these are the responsibility of the United States. So this is a measure that the authorities in the United States took.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC for short, placed sanctions on the three high-value targets at the top of the Kinahan cartel. Part of that package of sanctions was the $5 million reward that Ambassador Cronin was talking about at the start of the episode.
The real thing with sanctions is it makes very difficult for organized crime groups, for individuals to travel. And obviously, a key part for us is around money, moving, finances, people who set up companies. And I mean, we know obviously companies are set up, front companies, to facilitate organized crime, to facilitate money laundering, drug trafficking. So something like the OFAC sanctions make this really difficult for organized criminal groups.
So as well as the police attention they were dealing with in Europe, the Kinahans now had to deal with being wanted men in the US. That meant that, on top of the $5 million reward, the sanctions blocked any property of the Kinahans within the United States financial system and prohibited United States persons from doing business dealings with them. Anyone violating those rules or helping the Kinahans to evade the sanctions could be jailed for up to 20 years. In the years since the 2016 Regency Hotel shooting, the Kinahans' position has certainly changed. From murders in broad daylight in the Irish capital, the Kinahans have been forced to live far away from home, with all kinds of barriers to international travel and business. So where are they now?
I think it's important to know that, you know, these groups, they have many actors in them and spread across a number of countries, and actually, in fact, a number of continents. I mean, we are going to be very patient in this, and we are satisfied that the people behind these type of groups will come to justice. I'm confident by the amount of work and cooperation that we have that that will happen. But like, just to reiterate that, I mean, this is a matter of being patient, but we are. And I mean, I think all the people that I have working for me, I would actually probably not even describe it as patience. I describe it as being relentless. So that is our whole focus on groups like this.
So what is Europol's role in an operation like this against dangerous international fugitives?
Organized crime in the EU is increasing, and it's based on global networks nowadays.
That's Jari Liuku, and he's based here at Europol HQ. He is one of the key players behind our work on high-value targets, such as the Kinahans.
My name is Jari Liukko. I'm the head of Serious and Organized Crime Department at Europol. I started as a police officer in Finland in 1980. And since that, I've been working in different ranks in the Finnish police, and then also in the judiciary as a prosecutor and judge. I started here in 2017.
So what is the reason that Europol only goes after high-value targets?
This process was started actually 2018. We supported the member states in establishing a standard operating procedure, which is defining an operation task force concept. So it's actually standardizing each step of the process, starting from the start and selection of the targets until the end of the investigations. So the idea behind this is to really identify individuals that constitute the highest risk for internal security.
The targets Jari's referring to are those sitting at the top of the organized crime pyramid, leaders of OCGs, their key facilitators, or dangerous actors in the world of cybercrime, drug trafficking, or terrorism.
Investigating high-risk organized crime is really resource-demanding, and therefore member states need to prioritize the investigations, how they target different groups and individuals who are posing a risk for the internal security.
So how exactly is someone identified as a high-value target? Well, it all starts when a member state is conducting an investigation.
When they come across with an individual that they think might meet the criteria for the high-value targets, they can make a proposal to Europol, and we conduct an analysis based on the information that they are providing while proposing the target. And of course, we use the already existing information, which is in Europol databases, to assess whether the criminal activity of the individual is really meeting the criteria.
This procedure applies for all of the crime areas that Europol covers.
It doesn't have to be serious and organized crime. It can be terrorist activity. It can be cybercrime, economic and financial crime. So the operation centers of Europol. But our support starts from there. We make the assessment. Then we organize an operation meeting together with the countries which are involved, member states, third countries, because the high-value target and its criminal activities, his criminal or her criminal activities, need to affect two or more member states so that we have a mandate to do this. So we organize a meeting together with the countries participating, and then we go through the results of Europol's assessment. And then if the conclusion is that these individuals or this individual is meeting the criteria, so he or she can be selected as a high-value target.
These criteria relate to things such as the scale of the threat posed, the importance of the individual, the number of countries involved, measures like that.
And then if such individuals are identified, then a task force, operation task force, will be established. An operation task force is a temporary group of investigators from member states, third countries, with the support of Europol, which has a specific task to support the investigations on the criminal activities of the selected high-value targets.
This is what led us to support operations like the Irish investigation into the Kinahans.
In this case, we were supporting them in providing actionable information based on the information that Europol had. And then, of course, supporting providing also other type of support if requested.
Those requests could be for on-the-ground specialists, operational meetings at our HQ, or for intelligence, analysis, and access to Europol's technical capacities.
And of course, we are more than happy to continue this type of work and look forward to information from the Irish colleagues.
As well as the Kinahan case, Jari has been involved in investigations concerning dozens upon dozens of high-value targets. All these investigations are handled by Europol's Operational Task Forces, or OTFs. There is more to the high-value target approach than just going after the head of the criminal group. Like the rest of society, organized crime has gone digital. This means their networks are harder to penetrate and they can act more rapidly than decades ago. But there's another result of this digitization that you might not have thought of. Criminals are now more closely connected and they cooperate. Video conferencing and the online world allows people like you and me to find each other online and collaborate as never before. The same goes for criminals.
So that's why, because of this increasing trend and global connections, the member states, actually with the support of Europol, decided that we need to do something how to identify the individuals and then through the individuals, the groups and networks which are posing the highest risk for the EU member states' internal security.
A good example of criminal joint ventures and the importance of going after high-value targets comes from the world of drug trafficking.
The cornerstone for the high-risk organized crime groups in the EU is mainly drugs trafficking. Currently, it's mainly cocaine trafficking, which is a really productive crime area for the crime groups. And then, of course, while doing this, trafficking drugs, the other crime areas which are linked to the activities of these groups are, of course, violence, extensive violence. We see increasing violence. Just yesterday, we had a drugs program board meeting, and all the member states who are part of this board actually confirmed that there's an increasing trend of violence linked to organized crime, specifically drug trafficking activities. And then, of course, corruption, money laundering activities, and then weapons and explosives trafficking. Those are actually the key elements of the high-risk organized crime group activities. And therefore, of course, it's logical because they are global organized crime groups.
This is the phenomenon that makes high-value targets especially important. Using Yari's example of drug trafficking, there's a whole range of crimes that come with it. Drug trafficking brings violence, corruption, money laundering, and the trafficking of firearms and explosives. These are the means of criminals enforcing their will on others. The key facilitators, or leaders, can be part of many illicit schemes at the same time. This means that the arrest of one high-value target could bring multiple criminal operations down. For example, one money launderer could be working for multiple people smuggling networks. Criminals' collaboration extends beyond providing each other services. Let's stick with cocaine as an example. Production is on the rise once again. Here, criminals even collaborate on the shipments. The sheer volume of cocaine produced is so high that perhaps several organized crime networks will chip in on the same shipment.
Well, this is why they share the risk. Because if 7.7 tons of cocaine is seized, of course, it's a financial loss. But if you have many crews which are sharing the risk, well, then, of course, it's the impacts are not that high on single groups or networks. So this is, of course, something that they are doing like any business activity, because this is a business activity, after all, for these criminals.
The same goes for other areas of crime, too. Cybercrime as a service in areas such as ransomware means that criminals operate in a marketplace of services, buying or selling their wares to be used as part of various criminal schemes. Terrorist groups, even those with entirely opposing ideologies, are engaging online to swap propaganda techniques, toolkits for homemade weapons, and literature. How do we know all this collaboration is happening? We know because Europol sits at the heart of the EU's internal security architecture. Investigations here and in every member state are feeding criminal data into our systems. We also had major breakthroughs with our investigations into encrypted criminal communication platforms such as SkyECC and EncroChat. Not to forget the American-Australian-led Anom sting, Operation Greenlight, which we covered in Series 1. All this information allows us to maintain a picture of the organised crime landscape in the EU, and it enables us to zero in on the relevant targets. As our executive director, Catherine de Bolla, once said in a press conference, it was like we were in the room with all the organised criminals and the light had been switched on.
There were altogether 8,000 investigations initiated based on the EncroChat, SkyECC, investigations and the platforms. Last year we supported 2,700 investigations in total, Europol. So of course all these big operations are producing a lot of information.
But this is only one segment of the work in the area. Possibly more important is the everyday use of Europol systems by police in countries across the EU.
It's not only these encrypted communication platforms. The focus is on the basic investigations that the member states, when having cross-border crimes, they should use our services. So then the more we have information concerning real-time investigation, the better possibilities we have to support the member states.
It is, in fact, a lot of this everyday police work happening in all the EU member states that makes the high-value target approach possible. Because, thanks to the cooperation between countries, a small piece of seemingly insignificant information can bring us fresh leads in a case. This pays off in all kinds of ways. As well as showing how criminal methods are changing and being adapted in different jurisdictions, a breakthrough in one country's operation can, via Europol's information systems, lead to breakthroughs in other investigations conducted by other countries.
We have these good success stories, no doubt about it. But in the end, the basic work is the one which makes the difference. If the quality is there, then we have better possibilities. And it's the responsibility of each police officer, law enforcement authority, who is dealing with cross-border investigations on a daily basis to use these services. So then we will be able to dismantle these groups together.
And now, with Europol marking 25 years of operations in 2024, we've been able to extend our services to many countries and partners.
We are exceptional organization globally because we are combining, well, we have 51 actually countries at the moment who are using our systems. So if, you can imagine that if all those 51 countries are actively using our systems when investigating serious and organized crime, so of course it creates a huge amount of valuable information which will be then made available to those countries which are investigating these cross-border crimes.
Since that interview with Yari, we've continued to engage with more law enforcement agencies from different countries in Europe and overseas. After all, if criminal networks are working together to harm society and evade justice, it only makes sense that law enforcement works together to stop them. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Europol podcast. Be sure to subscribe and give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're using. And please consider sharing the podcast on your social media. It really helps us spread the word about our work in the fight against organized crime.